We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and once again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. Coming up on today's program, it's one of the famous Inner Sanctum mysteries, The Murder Prophet. But first, it's the Jack Benny program with special guest star Bob Hope. Jack Benny's gentle humor and mastery of broadcast technique made him one of the most beloved entertainers in show business history. Jack performed over four decades with many of the same supporting players and scriptwriters, largely because Benny always allowed his supporting cast to shine and, contrary to his on-air image, was actually a very generous boss. Today's program is entitled The Road to Bally by Sam Perrin with special guest star Bob Hope. Hope made more than 1,200 appearances on radio, beginning with the Major Bowles Capital Family Hour in 1932 and continuing into the 1950s with his own radio program when eventually he made the transference to television. On today's program, Jack and the Gang parody Paramount's successful 1952 film, The Road to Bally, with Bob Hope recreating his screen role and Bob Crosby enacting his brother's part. From January of 1953, it's the Jack Benny program on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bowles, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton, Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past to smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Jack Benny Program. Program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, in just 9 more days, a new tenant will move into the White House. And tonight, since we can't bring you the distinguished and lovable tenant, we bring you the mean old landlord, and here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard, saying that I own the White House.
But Jack, what I said isn't so ridiculous. Technically, as a citizen and taxpayer, you do own the White House.
Look, Don.
You own all the buildings in Washington. The Capitol, the Library of Congress.
Don.
The United States Post Office.
Don.
The United States Supreme Court.
Don.
The United States Mint.
Don, stop it. What'd you say? What'd you say? The Mint? What'd you say, Don?
I thought that'd get you, but Jack, it's true. You own it, I own it, all the taxpayers own it. It's like being a stockholder in a corporation, like the American Tobacco Company.
Well, Don, that's a very good comparison because everybody knows that the United States Mint is round and firm and fully packed. And if it isn't, it will be on March 15th. That I know.
March 15th? What happens on that day?
Well, Don, you wouldn't know about this, but people who earn over $500 a year have to pay taxes. Mary.
Hello, Don.
Hiya, Mary.
Mary, I said hello, too.
I know.
Well, what's eating you?
Plenty. All I asked you is let me keep a couple of packages of meat in your deep freeze. And this morning, Rochester sent them back to me. He said there was no room.
Well, Mary, if there's no room, there's no room.
Well, now wait a minute, Jack. I happen to know that your freezer is unusually large. And just a week ago, I looked in, and it was empty.
Well, it's full now.
No kidding. What's he got in it?
His Christmas tree.
All right, what's wrong with preserving a Christmas tree?
Jack's right, Mary. It isn't any of our business what he keeps in his deep freeze as long as he has plenty of meat, like those steaks he served us last night.
Some steak.
What do you mean, some steak? If you didn't like it, why did you eat so much?
I was trying to guess whether it was Dancer, Prancer, Donner, or Blitzen.
They were not reindeer. Those were very fine steaks. Didn't you see the government stamp on them, grade A?
Mine said Merry Christmas.
I wrote that on there myself. Now, look, Mary, we have a show to do tonight on a very important sketch. So let's try... What in the world was... Bob, what happened?
Well, Sammy, the drummer, he fell off the bandstand.
What?
Well, Jack, it isn't what you think.
No?
See, the boys in the band are just such practical jokers.
Practical joker. Why, what did they do?
Well, they took the electric wire that goes to Remley's guitar and taped it to Sammy's chair.
Well, of all things, wiring up his chair with electricity. I can't understand Sammy falling for it. Didn't he suspect anything when he sat on those wires?
Well, he didn't even get suspicious when they slit his pants legs.
Slit Sammy's pants leg?
Yeah, they didn't have to shave his head.
That I know. But, Bob, I think the boys are going too far. Sammy could have gotten electrocuted.
Oh, well, that's what the boys figured. So last night they took him to a cafeteria and told him to order anything he wanted.
Bob, you mean you went with him?
Oh, no, Jack, no. Don't you remember I was at your house?
Oh, yes.
Hey, by the way, what kind of steaks were those you served last night?
Huh?
Well, I went to bed, and every time I turned over, I heard sleigh bells.
Now, cut that out. I invite the whole gang over for a steak dinner. Instead of being grateful, you all make cracks about it being reindeer. The only one that hasn't is Dennis.
I can't talk. I've got an antler stuck in my throat.
An antler?
Your hat is still hanging on it.
I don't know why it is. I try to do a program and every...
Oh, Jack, take it easy.
I can't help it. Dennis, why do you go around irritating people?
I'm experimenting.
What kind of experiment is that? Irritating people?
When you do it to oysters, they give pearls.
Mary, you talk to him, will you?
Dennis, you better sing your song.
Okay.
So I fell in love with you, heart and soul, the way a fool would do, madly, because you held me tight and stole a kiss in the night. Heart and soul, I beg to be adored. Lost control and tumbled overboard. Gladly, that magic night we kissed, there in the moonlight. Oh, but your lips were thrilling, much too embrace can do. Look at me, what's got me loving you madly. That little kiss you stole held all my heart and soul.
That was Dennis Day singing Heart and Soul. And very good, Dennis. It was excellent. And now, ladies and gentlemen... Who can that be? Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny. This is Rochester.
Rochester, I'm in the middle of a program.
I know, but I want to tell you something.
Tell me something. I just left the house a little while ago. Why do you always call me at the studio?
I don't get applause at home.
Never mind that. What's so important?
A man was here from a fan magazine. He said they wanted to print the story of your life. Pictures and everything.
Oh, pictures too, huh?
Yeah, so I gave him some that were taken when you were in the Navy, some when you were in vaudeville, and some that were taken when you were entertaining overseas.
Oh, good, good.
Then he asked for one of your baby pictures, but I couldn't find any.
Well, what did you do?
I slipped him one of mine.
What?
Then he asked me a lot of personal questions, and I told him you were the nicest, kindest, and most considerate man I ever worked for.
Well, thank you.
Then he brought up the subject of your generosity.
Uh-huh.
So I told him for Christmas you gave me a bonus of $5,000.
You told him I gave you $5,000? What made you think he'd believe that?
Boss, when he didn't question the baby picture, I knew he was vulnerable.
Oh. Now, Rochester, I have to get back to the program, so I'll see you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
What now?
A few minutes after you left the house, an electric fuse blew out and your freezer went off.
An electric what blew out? A
fuse.
A fuse, huh? Am I,
Your freezer went out.
My freezer went off, I see. Good. Well, what happened to all the things I have in it?
Well, your Christmas tree is all right, but two snakes thawed out and ran up the chimney.
Ran up the... Now, that's ridiculous. Rochester, why did you make up a thing like that?
Boss, when you start with applause, you gotta end with a laugh.
I hope I am as fortunate. Goodbye, Rochester.
Goodbye.
You know, Rochester may not be a good butler, but he certainly...
What's the matter, Jack?
I wrote an ad lib in here, and I can't find it. Oh, well.
Well, Jack, what about the important sketch you said we were going to do tonight?
Oh, yes. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we will present our version of that wonderful Paramount picture, The Road to Bally, which stars Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, and Dorothy L'Amour.
You know, I saw it last night, Jack, and it really is a funny picture.
I know. Now, since I'm a comedian, I'll play Hope's part. And since Bob Crosby is Bing's brother, he'll play his part. And Dennis...
Okay, but I look lousy in a sarong.
Look, you're not playing Dorothy L'Amour's part. You're going to be a native we met in the jungle. A headhunter.
A headhunter?
Yes, and before we start, go hunt for your own. About time I had a joke in here anyway. Now, as a matter of fact, we were going to have Dorothy L'Amour on the show, but at the last minute, something happened.
She wanted money.
Oh, quiet. Now, Mary, you're going to be Dorothy L'Amour.
Okay, but with Bing and Bob in the picture, who's going to get me?
The maid company, if you keep making those cracks. Now that we've done all the casting, let's get on with our sketch. The Road to Bally.
Wait a minute, Jack. What about me?
Oh, yes, Don. You've got a very important part.
I have?
Yes. Paint a white line down your back. You're going to be the road. And lie straight out. I don't want any detours. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction of the evening, The Road to Bally. My name is Bob Hope. My vaudeville partner, Bing Crosby, and I were stranded in Australia. We were broke and hungry and had no friends in Australia, so finally, in desperation, we became pickpockets. The first pocket I picked, nothing. The second pocket, nothing. The third pocket bit me. I had picked the pouch of a kangaroo. After days of continued bad luck, we were walking down the street when I turned to my partner and said, "Gosh, 4 days and nothing to eat. I'm starved." Say, Bing.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day.
I knew there was something Bing could do that he couldn't. Bing, I can't understand why I'm a failure. I'm a talented dancer. I'm a wonderful singer. I'm a great actor. I'm a big star.
You're a big hand. Look, it's Bob Hope.
Bob Hope, what a surprise.
Some surprise. We had three rehearsals. I turned down the first two scripts, finally had to call in my own writers, and he surprised.
Look, Bob.
You can go home if you want. I've got a monologue here that will run through Amos and Andy, Edgar Bergen, and right up to the weather report.
Weather report?
Dull today, funny tomorrow.
Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you something. Rochester may not be a good butler, but he certainly... Oh, my goodness, I wrote it on the wrong page. Now, Bob, I'd like you to say hello to the other...
Just a second, Jack.
Huh?
A full minute has passed, and you haven't said it.
Oh, yes. The Road to Bally.
That's better.
Jack, why did you have to say Road to Bally?
It's either that or money. Hiya, Mary.
Hello, Bob.
Say, Bob, you know Bing's brother, of course.
Oh, sure. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
How do you feel, Bob?
Fine. How do you feel, Bob?
Fine. How's your wife, Bob?
Fine. How's your wife, Bob?
Fine. How are your kids, Bob?
Fine. How are your kids, Bob?
Four writers got paid $6,000 for this sparkling dialogue.
Say, Bob, I meant to ask you, does Crosby here resemble his brother Bing much?
I don't know. Let me see. Smile, Junior.
Okay.
Well, they look alike, but Bing is a little fatter around the wallet. He's also a little fatter around the place where he carries his wallet. Which reminds me, I'd like to ask you something, Junior.
What is it, Bob?
I haven't seen Bing since Christmas. What did he give Santa Claus this year? What?
Well, Bob, you know Bing. He doesn't splurge too much around Christmas time. He gives his biggest gifts on March 15th.
Amen, brother. Say, Bob, how come you haven't seen Bing for such a long time? You're both at Paramount, aren't you?
Yes, but they changed our dressing rooms and we're not next to each other anymore. I meant to tell you, Jack, they gave me your old dressing room.
No.
Really?
Imagine that. My old dressing room. Gosh, I can still see... Still picture it.
Start right through anywhere through there. It's all fun. That's what they did, Jack.
What?
I was okaying your line.
I see. Well, I can still see my old dressing room. There's a big landscape painting on one wall, a window on another wall, and What's on the third wall?
6 wash basins.
Now, Bob, let's get going.
I won't talk until you look at your watch.
Oh, yes, road to Bally, road to Bally. Gosh, 2 minutes go fast here.
Thanks, Jack.
Hello, Mr. Hope.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
You know, I saw your very first road picture, the road to Singapore.
Really?
Yeah, and then I saw the road to Morocco, the road to Zanzibar, the road to Rio, the road to Utopia, and last night I saw the road to Bali.
No kidding?
Yeah, and now that I finally met you in person, I'd like to tell you something.
What?
You're nothing without Bing Crosby.
Why, you E-flat idiot. I may cut the strings off you and let you just dangle. Is this fugitive from Glacamora sticking his tongue out at me?
No, that's an antler. Now, let's get on with the sketch.
What sketch?
The road to Bali.
Good. I got a free one that time.
I know, but I'm putting my watch ahead. Well, let's get on with the sketch.
Okay. Hey, Jack, who's that lying down on the floor?
That's Don Wilson. He's the road.
He certainly got the valley for it. Oh, yes, say, Jack.
What? I couldn't think of anything to say then, so I thought it was better to shut up.
What? I was trying to think of a freeway line, but I couldn't finish it either.
What?
Well, Jack.
Yes?
I think it's only fair for me to play the part I created in the picture.
Well, naturally. So I'll play Bing's part.
No, Jack, since Bob here is Bing's brother, he should play that role.
Well, what can I do in the sketch?
Well, you play the part of the giant octopus.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not playing any octopus.
But it's a very important part.
I don't care how important it is. Imagine a man of my position in show business playing an octopus.
But, Jack, it motivates the whole picture. You see, the octopus guards a sunken treasure worth millions of dollars.
Well, get me 6 more arms and let's go. I'll set the scene. Ladies and gentlemen, Paramount Pictures presents The Road to Bali with Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Dorothy L'Amour, and starring... The Octopus. Curtain. Music.
My name is Bob Hope. Crosby and I left Australia bound for the South Sea Islands to look for sunken treasure. We landed on the island of Attu and became hopelessly lost in the jungle. For days, we wandered through a tangle of vines. And then we came to a rubber plantation, went through it for quite a stretch. Rubber stretch? If I'd known I was going to get dialogue like this, I'd have worn top hat and white tie. No pants. You got to get laughs, you know. As we reached a clearing on the other side, we were surrounded by a fierce tribe of cannibals and their beautiful white princess. And my agent. The princess came up to me and said,
Me, native princess, who you?
Oh, how do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob What's Cooking Hope. Telling all you cannibals that while I'd like to bring you joy, don't look at me when you want to put something in the pot, boy.
No worry. My tribe not eat you. You very handsome man.
Oh, wait a minute. You don't look like the real princess.
Real princess not here. She want money.
All I want is you, baby. Kiss me, Tooch.
Hey, wait a minute, Dennis. You read my line.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yes, you did. Look at the script. It says Bob. That's me.
It says Boob. That's me.
Some sketch this is. It's crazy enough to have Jerry Colonna in it.
Ah, greetings, Git. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, wait a minute. You're not even in this sketch. How can you make love to the princess?
I don't ask questions. I just have fun.
Hey, Bob, what about me?
Beat it, Octopus. You come in later.
Oh.
Well, I'm getting out of here. Come on, Bing.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day...
what's those low notes being? We resumed our long trek through the jungle. Then our bad luck began. We had no food or supplies. At night, we had to light fires to keep the animals away. Then our water supply ran out. We had nothing to drink. We went 3 weeks without a bath. Then the animals started lighting fires to keep us away. Finally, we came to the coast. And we're looking down into the lagoon when the sunken treasure lay 7 fathoms deep. We got into a boat and rowed to the exact spot.
Well, this looks like the place. Don't you think so, Bing?
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day.
Now, look, I'll put this diving helmet on you. There. Now, go over the side and look for the treasure. Attaboy, Bing. Go down and get it. Here comes the giant octopus.
That's me, folks.
Oh, my goodness. The giant octopus ate up my pal, Bing. Octopus, octopus, say something.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day.
Bob, I want to thank you for appearing on our show tonight and letting us do a parody on your picture, The Road to Bally.
I'm glad to do it, Jack.
Good night, Bob.
Good night, Jack. Good night, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, be sure to hear The American Way, starring Horace Height, for Lucky Strike every Thursday night over the same station.
Programs written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsberg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks. Jack Benny Program is brought to you by Lucky Strike, product of the American Tobacco Company, America's leading manufacturer of cigarettes.
Stay tuned now for the Amos and Andy Show, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is the CBS Radio Network.
From January of 1953, there's the Jack Benny Program with special guest star Bob Hope and The Road to Bally. In a moment, we'll take a road to the Inner Sanctum and Murder Prophet as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Inner Sanctum sinister host every week invited listeners through the squeaking door into another night of horror. Lights Out veteran Raymond Edward Johnson provided the sibilant tones of Inner Sanctum's macabre host during the first 4 seasons. Paul McGrath took over as Inner Sanctum's host later on in 1945 and then continued in the role until 1952. Inner Sanctum Mysteries aired from January 1941 through October of 1952 and was created and produced by Hyman Brown. Today's program is entitled The Murder Prophet by Milton Lewis, with Paul McGrath as the host and Wendy Berry as Claudia. Who killed Claudia's first husband and her second, and the man who loved her? We'll find out next on Murder Prophet. From September of 1945, it's Inner Sanctum Mysteries on Yesteryear.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries, starring Wendy Berry. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you through the squeaking door into a gay little world of homicidal maniacs, vampires, ghosts, werewolves, and assorted forms of sudden and gory death. Friends, if you ever walk through a cemetery at midnight and see a girl whose hair is on fire and is carrying her head under her arm, you know what to tell her, don't you? Just say, keep a cool head on your shoulders, Toots. And run like crazy. And now, friends, get ready to try a new kind of Inner Sanctum story. It's called The Murder Prophet. And it's an original radio play by Milton Lewis, who copied it from a tombstone. Yes, and our star tonight is that glamorous Hollywood movie star, Wendy Barry, who plays the role of Claudia Dale. All right. Clear the floor and give your flesh room to creep. Ready? Then let's hear Claudia tell us the story in her own words.
At exactly midnight, I saw him for the first time. My headlights picked him up when he hailed me along a lonely stretch of road near my home. I wouldn't have stopped, but the storm was so fierce, I felt sorry for him. I drew up to the side of the road.
Thank you.
Going far?
No, not far.
Where to?
I'll let you know.
What's that?
Where?
There on the side.
Tombstone.
Oh, there's a cemetery where I picked you up.
Yes, Birchlawn.
Cigarette?
No, thank you. I don't smoke.
He said nothing for a few minutes. In the reflection of the dashboard light, I saw his face for the first time. Sunken eyes, hollow cheeks, mouth set in a queer grin, a skull barely covered with a thin layer of milk-white flesh. With a start, I realized he was staring at me.
I've seen you before.
Oh, I don't think we've met.
No, I know you.
Are you sure?
Yes. I would never forget someone so beautiful.
Oh, really?
You're Claudia Dale.
Why, yes.
You're married to Howard Dale.
That's right. But I don't seem to place you.
No, you wouldn't. I know quite a lot about you.
Do you really?
Your first husband was Willard Banks.
How did you know that?
He died 8 years ago, a suicide.
Who are you?
You don't know me. Be careful, you're speeding.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
You're trembling.
How do you know so much about me?
I just know.
Oh, really? I suppose you have second sight or some such rubbish.
It is not rubbish.
Then tell me where I'm coming from.
Pittsfield.
You guessed.
You went there to visit a sick friend, Martha Walston.
But you couldn't guess that.
You're going too fast. You're losing control.
No, I'm not. I'm quite all right. I can go fast if I choose to. I shall go as fast as I wish.
Would you care to know more of yourself?
No. No, I do not find your little trick particularly amusing. Besides, what else do you think you can tell me about myself?
Your future.
Oh, nonsense.
Your husband is dead.
Howard?
Murdered.
Oh, you're lying.
You'll find his body on the floor near the piano of your living room when you get home. There are two bullets in his head.
Get out of here. Get out of this car. Get out, you hear me? Get out!
Very well. It happens that this is where I wish to go. Good night, and thank you, Mrs. Dale.
He vanished into the shadows on the side of the road. And then I noticed something white and shining queerly in the spot where he disappeared. I looked closely. It was another tombstone in another cemetery. I raced madly for home, fighting the hysteria that seized me. The nightlight was burning in the living room. It couldn't be true. Howard would take me in his arms and kiss me when I stepped into the house. I rang the bell. No answer. Somehow I managed to get the key in the lock. I ran into the living room.
Hello.
Oh, who is it?
Right behind you. I've got a gun.
Oh, a gun.
Whip in the body.
Who are you?
Turn around.
Oh, you murdered
him. Keep quiet.
Oh, don't come near me.
Sit down.
Don't touch me.
I said sit down.
Please.
Oh.
Sorry I had to slap you. We're losing control. You don't have to scream for the police. Here's my badge.
You?
Detective Sergeant Quinn. Homicide.
Oh, I thought you were...
Yes, I know. Drink this.
Thanks.
Feel better?
Yeah, much.
Who is he?
My husband.
Sure?
Positive. When was he killed?
About 20 hours ago. Or yesterday morning.
How do you know?
One of the bullets went wild, hit that clock on the mantel. Where were you yesterday morning?
Pittsfield. I stayed with a sick friend, Martha Wallstone.
Now look at these things. I took them out of his pocket. They all his?
Yes. Where's the snake ring?
There were no rings.
But he had one. It was quite valuable. He was never without it. I gave it to him.
All right, now look. Did he wear it on the third finger of his left hand?
Yes.
There's a mark, but no ring.
When did you come here?
I drove in behind you. You left the front door open.
I think I know who killed him.
Who?
A man I met on the road coming here. He knew my husband had been murdered.
He did, huh?
He even said his body would be near the piano.
When did you see this guy?
Oh, 10-20 minutes ago. Picked him up on the road.
Where?
At Birchlawn Cemetery.
Where'd you drop him?
At another cemetery near here. He seemed to walk behind one of the tombstones. Oh, I know it sounds mad, but it happened just as I said.
What's his name?
I don't know. But he looked like a human cadaver. Like a man who's dead and... Oh, you don't believe me.
Why'd you kill your husband?
What? What are you saying?
You heard me.
Well, I told you I was in Pittsfield.
Why'd you go there?
Martha was ill.
Were you there at 4 yesterday morning?
Well, of course.
Don't lie.
Stop shouting at me. I told you who killed him. What are you trying to do to me? Isn't it enough to come home and find Howard like that without you trying to... Oh, in heaven's name, leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Not a scotch, lady?
No. No, thanks. Here, keep the change. I'm leaving.
Sit down, Mrs. Dale. Don't go in.
Ew.
Yes. Won't you please sit down?
Yes.
Didn't expect to find you here.
Nor I you.
Are they making it difficult?
It's a nightmare.
You told them about me?
Yes.
You shouldn't have. They wouldn't understand.
Did you kill him?
Would you care for another drink, Mrs. Dale?
No. Who are you?
I'll tell you later.
Why'd you come here?
To talk to you. I knew I'd find you here.
Yes, yes, you knew.
You're not so skeptical now.
No. What did you want to tell me?
That you are the most beautiful woman I have ever seen and that I love you. I've loved you since I first saw you 7 years ago, when you came here to live with your husband.
Is that why you...
Why I killed him? Is that what you meant to say?
Yes.
I'm not an ordinary man, Mrs. Dale, but I'm not a fool. Now, on this card, you'll find my name, address, and telephone.
Do you really believe I'd phone you?
Yes. There will come a time when you shall want love. Good night, Mrs. Dale.
Good night. Hello? Operator, get me police headquarters and hurry, please.
Yes?
That's him, Detective Quinn. That's Garth Dragman.
Thank you, Mrs. Dale. Do you mind coming down to headquarters, Mr. Dragman?
Not at all. Did she tell you that I murdered her husband?
Yes.
I thought she would. I'm not angry, Mrs. Dale, and what I told you earlier this evening still goes. I'll come along right now, Mr. Quinn.
I didn't sleep a wink that night. Twice I got out of bed and drove to police headquarters. The lights were blazing in Quinn's office. I went in the third time. I couldn't bear waiting.
Oh, Miss Dale.
Well?
Glad you stopped by. I checked everything Dragman said. Seemed he was in the same bar and grill where you met him tonight when your husband was killed.
You believed him?
Naturally. Bartender and several regular customers backed up a story. Seems they all left together after the place was closed to play poker.
Well, what about the things he said to me in the car? How could he know about the murder before you or I?
That I don't know. Perhaps he does have second sight. Odd-looking fellow, isn't he? You can't arrest a man for murder because of that.
He's criminally insane, I tell you. I know he is.
My dear Mrs. Dale.
Oh, what's the use? I loved Howard. I loved him to the point of insanity. Otherwise, there was no accounting for the things I did when I left police headquarters. I was determined to find the man who murdered my husband. It was towards dawn when I made up my mind what to do. I went to Garth Dragman's home. I was about to ring the doorbell when...
Don't ring, Mrs. Dale. The door is open.
Come in.
You were expecting me?
Yes, I was expecting you. Do you still think that I killed him?
I don't know what to think anymore.
Do you want me to find the person who murdered him?
Yes, more than anything in the whole world.
See, I have strange gifts, Mrs. Dale. And I do believe I understand the mind of a criminal. That mad impulse to crime, that strange, twisted desire to take a living being, a creature of arrogance and power, and make it a corroding, lifeless mass of flesh fit for worms.
Oh.
You're shocked? Crime is a shocking, evil thing, and only a man with a brain of a genius can succeed at it. And only a man with a greater brain can trap a successful criminal. I'll find your murderer for you, Mrs. Dale. On one condition.
What's that?
That you marry me.
I felt my body turn to ice. I knew I was talking to a madman. I was sure I was talking to the man who'd murdered my husband.
Oh, shucks. It's not so hard to predict a murder. I can do it. It's easy. I predict that there'll be at least one murder every week on Inner Sanctum. Don't forget, they can always make a comeback as a ghost on next week's show.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
All right. Let's get back to the other world now. The world of creeping, crawling horrors. I'll bet you think that Garth Dragman can't really foretell murders. Or do you think that Claudia doesn't have the courage to trap this homicidal Romeo? Or is he the killer? We let our star, Wendy Barry, in the role of Claudia tell you. Go ahead, Claudia. Shock him into the shakes.
2 weeks later, I married Garth Dragman. He was the strangest man I ever knew. He would disappear for days at a time and then suddenly turn up without warning. He had all the money he wanted, yet I never knew where it came from. There was a closet in his room which was always kept locked and bolted. I knew from the way he acted about it that the closet contained the answer to all the things I wanted to know about him. One night while he was away, I obtained tools and tried to force the lock.
Good evening, Claudia.
Oh, Garth.
You didn't expect me back, did you?
No, I
knew you'd try to open that closet someday.
Well, why do you keep it locked?
So that no one but myself shall know what's in there.
Not even I?
You in particular.
But Garth,
You'll not attempt to open it again, will you, Claudia?
No.
Forgive me for striking you. I'm not quite myself tonight. I sometimes do things I regret when these moods come upon me.
He sat down. He seemed terribly exhausted, completely spent. But there was a strange, wild light in his eyes. He seemed like a man intoxicated with some strange drug that few men know the taste of.
You do forgive me, don't you, Claudia?
Yes, of course.
See, it's something that few people know, Claudia, but a person who has extraordinary powers carries an extraordinary burden.
You mean your gift of prophecy?
Yes, I didn't want to mention it. It seems to upset you so.
It doesn't frighten me any longer.
Did you read in the newspaper about a woman's body being found in the river? She'd been murdered, garrotted.
Yes, it was in this evening's paper. They don't know who she is.
I can tell you who she is. Josephine Ford. The stupid girl, Claudia. I could have told you that she'd be murdered 3 days ago.
How do you know these things?
Because I see them. Sort of vision. Now I'm seeing another vision. It's a house, 346 Harbor Street, near the waterfront. A young woman lies in bed reading. She's very attractive. In an hour, she'll be dead. When the police come, they'll find her body decapitated. The criminal did this to destroy her identity.
But who is the criminal?
What difference does it make? He'll never be caught.
Garth, while you were gone, Martha Wallstone telephoned. She's ill again. She asked me to come up immediately.
Why didn't you go?
Well, I was waiting for you to get home before I left.
You want to leave immediately?
If you don't mind. It's really an emergency.
You may go, Claudia. I shall go to sleep. I'm extremely tired.
It took only a few minutes to get to the waterfront. I found the house at 346 Harbor Street. I went in. The lamp in the bedroom was burning. I looked at the bed. I fainted.
Hey, Mrs. Dale. Think you can sit up now?
Detective Quinn.
Yes. Hardly expected to find you here.
I came because Garth Dragman predicted this would happen.
Oh, Mrs. Dale.
You still don't believe me?
You're a strange woman, all right. You accused this man of killing your husband and then you married him. I suppose you're going to accuse him of this murder, too.
Yes. This and heaven only knows how many others.
Mrs. Dale, do you realize that you haven't got a single piece of evidence to back up your contention?
I'll get the evidence tonight. Will you let me have a gun?
No.
Will you be near my house? I'll need protection.
Oh, after all.
What must I do to convince you what he is? I've risked my own life. I'm willing to risk it again. He's a monster. You're going to wait until he murders me before you believe what I say.
All right. I'll give it a try. I'll come back to your house with you. If you want me for an emergency, smash the window pane.
We drove back together. I dropped Detective Quinn on the corner. The house seemed deserted when I came in. But I wasn't taking any chances. I went to the kitchen, got a knife, hid it in the folds of the long-sleeved gown I was wearing. I went into Garth's room. He wasn't there. But the closet door was open. What I saw in there nearly made me ill. Clothes. Garth's clothes. Some of them soaked in blood. I forced myself to examine them. Then I found something that made my heart beat faster. A little jewelry case.
I'll take that, Claudia.
Oh, Garth.
Give me that jewelry case,
oh, no.
Please.
No, don't take it.
Thank you.
Garth.
Get away from that window, Claudia. Go on.
Oh, don't shoot, Garth.
You were so anxious to see what's in that closet. Well, now you have. Perhaps you'd like to see the latest addition to my collection. It's in this box.
That box?
Yes, Claudia. A hat box.
Garth!
Sit down, Claudia.
What are you going to do?
Tell you who killed your husband.
You?
No. You.
You're insane.
I've written out a confession for you to sign.
What'll happen if I don't sign it?
Well, I credited you with more imagination. Would you like to hear it?
Yes. Yes, read it, please.
Sit over here, away from that window.
Yes.
I, Claudia Dale, murdered my first husband, Willard Banks, for his insurance by administering poison.
My first husband?
Yes, Claudia. See, I mean to make this document strong enough to send you to your death if I wish. I've got all the details here, just how you murdered your first husband, how you killed your second. Shall I go on?
No. You know it's all a lie.
Will you sign it?
Of course not. Just what is your game anyway? If you want to kill me, why don't you shoot? You've been very successful before. There's no reason you shouldn't succeed again. Go on, shoot!
You put me in a very difficult position, Claudia. You see, you have found out certain things about me. Things that could cost me my life. I will not tell you again to get away from that window, Claudia. I should prefer to see you live because I love you. But I shouldn't hesitate to murder you.
You love me?
Yes.
You haven't taken me in your arms once since I know you.
The right time had not arrived.
What do you consider the right time?
When I feel that you understand me. When I feel that you, who murdered two men, understand the deep and strange cravings and desires that race in my blood.
You really believe I'm a murderess?
Of course. That's why I love you.
Then the time is now.
The time?
To take me in your arms.
Claudia.
He still held the gun. He wasn't more than 2 inches from me. I turned my lips up to him. I twisted my body to get out of the range of his revolver. When I felt his lips touch mine, I slowly let the knife slip into my hand. Slowly, caressingly, I drew my hand up towards his neck. Then I plunged the blade in.
Claudia!
Detective Quinn, hurry!
I'm coming. What happened?
I killed him. And here's the proof that he murdered my husband. I found it in the jewelry case he had in his pocket. It's the snake ring that was missing from my husband's body. Now do you believe me? That's the whole story. I realize that you, as the district attorney, must know all the facts. There they are.
Thank you. There are a few points in the story that interest me particularly. First, a confession that he asked you to sign.
What about it?
The confession says that you went out in Pittsfield at 4 a.m. when your husband was killed. She gave your friend Martha Wallstone a sleeping pill, drove her down here, shot your husband, drove back to Pittsfield, turned Miss Wallstone's bedside clock to 4:15 and wakened her. And you gave her the medicine. She thought it was 4:15 and went back to sleep.
Garth was very clever at things like that. He had extraordinary brilliance of the insane.
And just one question. Was that the way you murdered Howard Dale?
I? Oh, but Garth murdered him. The ring proves it.
You never had the ring. You put it in the jewelry box.
I can't believe what you say. Garth was a homicidal maniac. He predicted the death of the people he murdered.
My dear woman, don't you know yet?
Know what?
That Dragon was a detective working out of my office. That's how he knew about those deaths. He was put on the case because we suspected you of murdering your first husband as well as your second.
A detective?
Yes. And you're going to die for killing him. Extremely daring and clever of you to murder him. But you never would have gotten away with it if he hadn't kissed you. He kissed you because he fell in love with you. That poor fool.
Well, friends, that just goes to prove that you should never pick up hitchhikers who come out of cemeteries at midnight. And I bet you've guessed the moral for our story. It's taken from a famous quotation that Harry the Hangman uttered during a nightmare. Never steal the rings of people you murder, on account of that's robbery. And now here's a cheerful little thought. You can let a man murder you once, but You'd have to be a stiff to let him do it again. And I'm afraid it's time to close the squeaking door. So, good night. Pleasant dreams. Yeah.
From September of 1945, it's been The Murder Prophet by Milton Lewis on this edition of Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for, but we invite you to join us again next week at this very same time for more of the best of the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so, dio, vo, dio, do, dio, do. Radio.